C1G, number 26A.
We come to the tone of principle, a rather short exposition. The epitome here reads, Christian Science gives the true interpretation of the divine principle and of the scriptures and proves its correctness by the good it accomplishes. With that, practically everything is said, what is said in the text that Mrs. Eddy gives. We can actually elaborate it and say, how did she come to that subject? As we said before, when somebody like Mrs. Eddy comes forth and says, I found the science of being, and says, you know, man originates not in the apes, but in mind, and says that spirit, that man evolves spiritually and not materially, as you people say, you naturalists say, and if I say that man is immortal and does not need to gain immortality, that is a flap in the face of the naturalists. And we can't just flap the naturalists without really giving them a proof. So the only defense she had for her statement was that she says, you know, I can prove that to you. It is not only that the Bible would support my statement, but also my demonstration of that statement, of that principle, I can prove that principle. So all what she gives here is that she first brings up this question, is Christian Science contradictory? Another question, is the divine principle of creation actually misstated? Do I say something wrong? Is it actually so that God has no science to declare mind the great creator, the first cause? Is it actually so? And answers that, she says, naturally, from your standpoint, from your material standpoint, from which you go out, if you look first at matter and then try to deduce from matter a theory, then naturally you naturalists cannot see what I say, and you cannot understand what I say. But if you change your standpoint and either accept the Bible as true, or what I say as true, then you have a new standpoint from which you go out, and then I and you and everybody can prove that principle. So the proof of Christian Science, she says, lies by demonstrating that principle to be good, by demonstrating it as curing and healing disease. And finally, she says, and you can prove it for yourself. You not even have to rely on me or what I say, but you can try it out yourself, if it's true what I say or not. That's the whole point over one whole page. Very easy, wouldn't you say? It's very reasonable to bring in at the point of principle the defense against the naturalist who would deny that her basis of principle, namely light, mind, spirit, soul, is wrong. Then she goes on to the fifth subject of life, and this subject is rather longish. It's the longest part in it. It goes over five pages, and yet it is simple, because it turns around the main point now here, because the whole third part is life and mind, and therefore there is a great accent on life and to explain life as we see it in Christian Science versus how the world sees life, namely as embryonic life and as corporeal life and things like that. When you read this part through, you will notice that it is full of terms that are related really to evolution, to the theory of life's evolution. There are about 70 references within those few pages that all have to do with that theory of creation or evolution. Here she speaks to the naturalists, and I just run quickly through the terms that she uses here just to impress you that a completely different subject is under consideration. She speaks here now about the famous naturalist, about the celebrated naturalist, about the distinguished naturalist, about the Abel's naturalist, just to bring out that she has some kind of knowledge of what these newest theory at her time were saying, and brings in Darwin and Agassiz. She brings in all that has to do with theories of creation and the theory of evolution and the true theory of the universe and the mortal theory of the universe. She speaks about the history of mortality and of natural history and material history, about evolution and material evolution, about the ascent of the species, the history of mortal material life, about the origin of man, the starting point of life, the point of emergence of human race. Can you hear? They are all terms that have somehow a connection with the theories of evolution. Naturally, a lot in it therefore has to do with propagation, with producing, generation, the method of reproduction, the method of multiplication and germination. Through what? She brings up embryology, embryonic life, embryonic evolution, from seed, ovum, eggs, germs, buds, self-division. Can you see? In this way you first notice that here the subject turns around life versus a false concept of life. So the epitome that we are considering here is first the overall epitome that he wants to bring out here, what? That life is. That life is. That life evolves spiritually. And the counterfeit of it, life is not embryonic. Again, you can see the second sentence I could have left out, because it's implied in the first sentence. If life evolves spiritually, then naturally it cannot be embryonic. Can you see, when we know our categories clearly, then even those simple statements like life evolves spiritually, you can at once elaborate by the exact opposite. And as you know now, the exact opposite of life evolving spiritually, you would see that you could say that life cannot evolve materially, because material is the opposite of spiritually. And so you at once, only through the contraposition, through taking in the counterfeit and the negative of the counterfeit, you can already state new truths without really deviating from the subject. So, how does she now in detail elaborate this whole subject that life is and evolves spiritually? So she starts out again and goes back, right back to mind, that is always her starting point, and says, well, the ordinary theories of evolution, see, she has to deal now with the ordinary theory of evolution, imply that mind creates materially. She goes out right from the creative activity, from the creative origin, and says, the trouble is that the naturalist think that mind creates materially. Somehow they accept that right back somewhere, there must be God, there must be a creative universe, that there must be a creative intelligence that is at the base of every material evolution, because they say, why suddenly turns inorganic matter into organic matter? There must be somewhere a creative impulsion, a creative intelligence that has been able to bring about that mutation. So in a way they accept that there may be a mind that is God, but they at once say that mind creates materially and not spiritually. So that's the very first mistake they make, and if they have a wrong basis, all that evolves out of that must be wrong. So that was the view of Agassiz and Darwin, that they felt that mind really produces matter and then endows matter with creative power. Life as spirit goes on. The true theory, see, first in mind she had the ordinary theories of evolution, the wrong theories. Now as spirit she corrects it. The true theory of the universe is in spiritual and immortal development. Can you hear the tone of spirit? Spiritual development. So from the true standpoint, from the true theory, we have spiritual development, and she also therefore brings out, and that is what the scriptures really teach us, that the scriptures must first be understood spiritually and not materially, and then they show that there is a spiritual evolution taking place. You go to soul, and you see, therefore, through, you see now, can you see what she has done? No, you can't, because I haven't read yet what soul says. In soul, she says, through entertaining the spiritual sense of being, humanity is lifted out of a corporeal sense of existence. Can you see soul in it? You see? Soul is the spiritual sense of being, life, because it's life as soul. So the spiritual sense of being, humanity is lifted out. Can you see? Soul resurrects. It's always that which lifts you out of something false, lifted out of a corporeal sense, counterfeit of soul, of existence. Life. So you have twice that combination of soul and life, life as soul, and shows, so to say, the rule of how we can get away from that situation. Now I said, can you see? First she states in mind the wrong theory, which says, the divine mind creates materially. Then, as in spirit, she takes the true theory, which says, no, the evolution is spiritual. And now comes the third, which says, now what are you going to do with those two? Which one is right? Which one do you want to take? What are you going to do about these two theories? And so soul comes and says, what you should do is to lift you out of a material sense into a spiritual sense of things, and then this will take care of the wrong sense. So through entertaining the spiritual sense of being, humanity is lifted out of a corporeal sense of existence, out of that false statement in mind. So always soul is that which gives the rule of resurrecting ourselves and standing above it. It's always the rule of soul that says, lift yourself so that you are supreme over it, so that the greater can control the lesser, stand above it. That's always the rule that is given. then you will see life as it is. We go to principle, the naturalist system of evolution. Now it comes the system of evolution, you see, the principle and system. Can you hear the tone of principle? Must give place to what? To the metaphysics of Christian Science. You have the positive sense of principle. So what she compares here is actually the system of the natural scientist versus the system of Christian Science, which is metaphysics. And so she says, the false must give place to the right systems. She even goes on to say, look here, we cannot rely really on the system of the naturalists, but because they come up every other year with another theory. And every other theory contradicts or corrects the preceding theory. So how would you know that you have now the right theory when they change them over and over and over? They really build on various theories. Sometimes they say that the reproduction comes from an egg. Then suddenly they say, no, it comes from buds. And suddenly they say reproduction comes from self-division. Well, today she would have even more to say, that they would say, well, it comes from the genetic code or anything like that. I'm not too versed in everything in biology nowadays. Nobody knows actually anymore what's really going on. It's going so fast. But you can see that what she brings out, they change their system after every 10, 20 years, so which is right. And so she feels that they are vague hypotheses, that it is much clearer and much more purer if you have a metaphysical system from a principle that interprets itself through a system of metaphysics. That cannot change. So once she has said, now you have to have a paradigm shift, really, from a wrong system to the system of the divine metaphysics, then life as life says, life is infinite, now the great I am. That's the positive sense of it. Now we come to the nowness, the I am-ness, the isness of life. What follows in the epitome could be left out because it just says the counterfeit. It is not embryonic, nor does it ascend through all the lower grades of existence. So naturally, if life is, it doesn't have to ascend through lower grades of existence. It is here where Mrs. Eddy gives a rather long explanation of the theories of evolution. She says here all about what Agassiz says, that they felt that the origin of man is material in a non-intelligent egg. And she asks therefrom, from where comes then life or mind? Life capitalized, and she says, well, the origin is in God. God is the life and mind, and God forms and preserves every individuality, every being. So being is now and forever. Then the counterfeit of it, therefore, there is no use to investigate material life. Can you see, she even goes as far as to say, be consistent. If life is, and life is God, and therefore life is not evolving in a material way, why are you going to spend all your energies and time and thought to investigate material life if it is anyway not true, not the right sense of life? Because she says, life has no starting point, is not embryonic, life is infinite, therefore go back to life, to the isness of life. And here she refutes also Darwin's ascent of the species, that there is no ascent through all the grades of existence. Can you see, she really goes to the core of something that is very much ingrained in our consciousness, that we feel that man evolves materially, he evolves towards something higher and higher, because the first signs of life as a little cell or things like that, that has no more any resemblance with man, with his brain, with his thinking, with his possibility to think in abstract terms, in symbols, and so on, to calculate in symbols. What has that still to do with just the first little cell? But really she refutes that whole theory of Darwin, of the ascent of species through grades of existence, and even refutes the gradation of human thought. Life is. And I think this subject is terrific, because we know that innate within us is always that sense that somehow we have to get out of chaos, to get out of a material sense of life. How do we get to spiritual life? Do we have to go through the transition of death to get there? Where she says, well, life is, and that we always should go out right now where we are from the isness of life. Therefore, from that life which does not think backward, from where I came from, where was my origin, where was my birth, where was I before birth, going back or going forward towards what will happen with death and after death, will there be reincarnation, will there be more and more stages of life to go through, she would say, let that drop. This is all false theory of the evolution of life. And I think one of the most impressive thing is really to sit back and be still and consider how I would consider my life if there is just life, capital L. That life, capital L, which does not know a past, a present, nor a future, which just does not know space nor time, which just is factuality of being. And it's quite a different situation. Then we would drop all that burden of the theory of evolution and things like that. She goes on and brings in a sense of truth, life as truth, showing that in true life, therefore, there is no heredity. There is no evolution of heredity. That if there is no evolution of life, then there is also no evolution of characteristics. That we are not reproducing also the characteristics of the generation that went on before. Therefore, it's disproving the law of heredity, which says we get the same character as our parents or our grandparents, we get the same nose as my father, and I get the same disease as my mother, and I get the same character as my grandmother, etc., etc., etc. If we see that life has no past, you see, life as life has no past, then it cannot have any hereditary diseases. And so she takes in that in a quite a unique way, that there is no hereditary laws or beliefs. And finally she comes to life as love. The epitome reads, with Christian Science, we must emerge from the notion of a material life as all in all. So as to say, well, it seems that our human life is constantly concerned with material life, and we feel everything turns around material life and our material life. It seems that material life is just all and everything, as if nothing else would exist. And she would say, from the point of view of love, actually, material life is not such a big thing as you think. It's actually nothing. If life, capital L, is, then actually material life is not a big thing. So let it go. We must emerge from that notion, really, that we constantly turn around in consciousness everything about material life. How much do I get? How can I support it? What will happen to my life? Where did it come from? All these questions. How can I sustain material life? How can I sustain it without disease, in a healthy state? And so on, and so on. You see, it's all straining at gnats. Whereas the one big camel we should really culture is really that there is only life, capital L, and that life, capital L, is all in all. Then we would have touched the tone of life as love.